Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Our my loyal listeners, thank you for your continued support. And remember to click that subscribe button, everybody. This amazing episode goes aboard the mothership is James C. Clayton. He's the director and star of Bulletproof, featuring Vinnie Jones. Now come aboard as we go traversing the stars.
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Thank you so much for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Totally mine as well, sir. It's an honor to speak with you.
Hey, the honor's mine. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for rescheduling. I know we had a mishap last week, so it's a privilege.
You know, time zones suck. It's really the problem here. there's no good way around time zones, unfortunately. But I will say, anytime there's ever an issue with scheduling, it's always a time zone problem.
Yeah, totally.
So I always start off with a question of inspiration. So what inspired your love for movies and who your earliest influences?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I wouldn't know who inspired my love for movies. It probably would have been my mom, only because I spent most of my time with her. And the earliest thing I can remember is watching movies with her. And I don't know if she was, you know, being a bad parent or not, but I remember watching like Alien and a lot of these like really hardcore feature films when I was like in grade one or two. It was nuts. Like probably because I'm a father now, so I question that choice, but I mean I feel like I turned out okay and I've got a love for it. To give you a bit of a more specific answer, probably watching Bryan Singer's X-Men when I was 16 in the movie theater is what really cemented me to, you know, want to be a filmmaker and an actor, producer, director. And I mean, I was blown away by all the cast in the film, but of course, Hugh Jackman, it's what made him a star. And I just remember watching him on screen going, this is the coolest guy I've ever seen in my life, right? Like maybe one day, right?
So we're going to get to it in a little bit. I have to jump in with the question right now. So you're the actor of Vinnie Jones is in your movie. He's from X-Men The Last Stand. Is that the connection there?
No, not at all. I mean, it's funny. That's right, because he was a wonderful juggernaut in that movie. I've always been a huge Vinnie Jones fan. I mean, right from Lock, Stock and Snatch and, you know, all the other films that he's made an appearance in. And what happened was, is when I was developing the project and, you know, specifically we created that character, he was who I had in mind. So it was one of those weird things, you know, out of all the films that I've been fortunate enough to be involved in making with, where we got our first choice. Like I put an offer out, reached out to his representation, we got him. And then the rest is history. He was wonderful to work with.
Did you get him to say the line from Juggernaut? Was it, I'm the Juggernaut bitch? Did you get him to do it? Or is that uncool?
Oh, no, because you know, Vinnie Jones, I would never want to like disrespect or cheapen him in any way, but much because, you know, I have a lot of respect for him as a person, but also too, like he's such a good actor. People don't think of him as an actor, right? They think of him more as like a presence or a personality, but man, did he hammer me on story questions. And thank God I was prepared, right? because when Vinnie Jones is asking you a question and then he stares you down and it's like, I felt like I was in a room with Charles Bronson or something like that. Well, you got to make sure that you've got, you know, your ducks in a row, so to speak.
Is it hard to stay cool around someone like because he's a legitimate celebrity. Once again, famous for, like, as you mentioned, the present, a little intimidating on screen. Is it hard to stay cool around him, or is it just like, I'm the director, producer, I'm the boss, dude?
No, never like that. You know, he's such a professional that there was never an air of like power or seniority. So I, you know, fortunately enough, I didn't have to contend with that. But also too, I think it goes back to my previous answer. It really depends on how prepared you are. Mm-hmm. I think if I hadn't been prepared, you know, for my role as a director, and wasn't able to really meet him at his level, I think I probably would have been shaking in my boots. But I actually had a wonderful experience with him. I never really felt outside of my zone when I needed to talk to him about a scene or talk to him about the reason why something had to be a certain way because of the way that we were executing the scene in camera, so to speak.
Now, if my research is correct, and it may not be, but if it is, this is your first directorial effort. Your history before it was you handled finance, packaging, producing. This is your first directorial effort. Is that correct?
That's true. Yeah. I started off as an actor as a kid, an actor, singer, just artist in general, and then went into producing and financing. And really, I mean, it started because I was tired of waiting around for a job. Mm. You know, I've been lucky enough to work on, you know, some larger television series, but I really wanted to feel like I was being vital as an artist all the time. So that got me into producing, which led me to financing, which led me into, you know, sales of film, which is, you know, all related. And for years, everyone's always asked, you know, when are you going to direct a film? I feel like you could be good at it. And I always shied away from it. But, you know, the mood struck and I figured, okay, well, let's give it a shot. And we did it.
So draw me that line. So how did you get the knowledge to direct from your experience behind the set as producer, financer, and things of that nature?
Well, I mean, fortunately enough, you know, I've been fortunate to be on a lot of sets, whether they're really small or really big. And just being a fly on a wall as an actor, and then I learned how, you know, story, acting, how to talk to actors just from pure experience for the last 30, 35 years. Hmm. I know, I don't look that old. And then in terms of producing, I like to be so hands-on and I'm so involved. That was another layer of it actually informs acting when you're producing, informs the storytelling, because being able to tell a competent story within the parameters of your financial constraints really is part of it. Hmm. And then working with the directors at that level, you start to understand. And then being a fan of watching movies, you end up, you know, developing your own voice. And so that's where I really learned. It was really trial by fire, making a lot of different mistakes too.
So having gone from, as you said, producing and financing on, you did small movies, you've done the larger movies. Is the difference just one of magnitude, or is there a significant difference between doing the large films and the smaller indie films?
Yeah, you know, I mean, every film is different, but I will say it all comes down to how complicated the story is. And you're just, I mean, you can have a really small budget film, and if there's a lot of different story mechanisms, it can be hard to execute. You could have a huge tentpole and it's super simple, but it's really hard to execute because of just managing your team and your production and all of those moving parts. So it's a hard one to answer. I think it really comes down to just kind of your acumen about how you handle people in front and behind the camera, and also how prepared you are and just kind of the type of material. I mean, on Bulletproof, we had, you know, explosions and multiple cameras coming and stunts happening. I had to rely on an incredible amount of listening and being very calm. And I had a tremendous team, which allowed me to be that way, because I think a lot of people probably would have had a nervous breakdown, to be honest. Like when I watch a Michael Bay film and I see some of the stuff he's doing, I'm like, this guy is a superhero. Because to have to be able to coordinate all of that spectacle and to do it constantly, and his films are grossing $1 billion.
Hmm.
I've got nothing but respect for the man. It's not a small feat.
So, you know? As you said, as the first-time director, you chose to do Bulletproof. So why was Bulletproof the movie that you wanted as your... Whatever, sorry. So what was about the project itself that got you excited?
Well, you know, I actually developed as an original idea and originally curated by me, you know, with the writers Danny Mack and Cooper Bebo. I wanted to make a fun movie that I had grown up watching. I wanted to make something with a 90s or 80s sensibility, something that was accessible, something that would traverse multiple audiences. And action, horror, they're the two. I had just come off of doing 4 horror films in a row. So I was a little burnt out on that style of material. And so I wanted to do something that, I mean, we're shooting people. It's just as horrific, right? But I wanted to do something a little bit more popcorn in that summer vibe. So that's why Bulletproof was the one.
By the way, I do think that's a really kind of funny comment, that Yeah, something about shooting people is not scary. The other stuff we're finding hard to find, but nah, he's just being shot. That's totally cool.
I know, it's interesting, right? You know, our relationship in our society to violence, I mean, to varying degrees, right? But, you know, people would go, oh yeah, I'll watch an action film, but they won't watch a horror movie. And it's like, same stuff's kind of happening in it.
Right, right. I know, there's something about the action movie, I guess they're just like, that's enough separation from everyday life, maybe, that it's not as scary. But cause I guess most of us are not being in a shootout. Oh. However, a guy with a knife, I guess, is more possible.
I guess. But I mean, you know, even with, you know, you're kind of getting outside of your everyday life with the action. I mean, you're kind of doing that when you've got, like, you know, a three-headed monster coming at you, you know, out of the closet. It's just as much as a departure. But, you know, it's interesting. I think maybe sometimes people can't handle fear as much, right? Like there can be shock value in violence, but it's not as, I'm working it out with you while we're doing the interview. It might not be as arresting, because I know some people, they won't even touch a horror film because they dream about it too much.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's pretty cool.
Sleep.
So is it possible because of also directing, and as far as action is so quick, it doesn't give you time to build up that same level of fear, that a horror movie is paced in such a way that it's this impending doom?
I think it depends on the material of the action. You know, Saving Private Ryan's not an action film, but there's certainly a tremendous amount of action, but just because the nature of the material and the way it's executed, there's some moments in there were quite terrifying, you know. I think it all comes down to that, really. It's how the material's handled.
So when you're directing something like Bulletproof, and I think a key to a good action movie is, to some extent, but allowing the audience to live vicariously through the main character, you know, participate in the excitement. So when you're directing and developing the story, how are you making it so the audience feels like they're a part of the story?
Well, on this one in particular, I really felt it was important to have fun action, but also too a sense of humor to it. So there's a lot of levity to the film. As much as the stakes are really deep, there's levity, there's heart, there's one-liners, you know. Some people might find them cheesy, but they're actually quite endearing, and they're there for a reason, to kind of remind you that we're just watching a movie here. I'm not trying to solve the world. I really just want you to have like a fun 90 minutes and then kind of move on with your life, you know? So that's certainly one way I approached it. Also too, and this is, you know, a little bit more of kind of like a conscious structural choice, but the protagonist character that I play, the thief, he doesn't have a name. And I mean, it's something that's been done so many times before. I mean, Quentin Tarantino did it, you know, in Kill Bill, you know, his version, and Christopher Nolan did it in Tenet, you know, with the protagonist, and, you know, Sergio Leone, the man with no name, and all that kind of stuff. But what's so interesting about using that dynamic, especially in these types of films, is it's such an immediate experience. It's like another level of, okay, so the audience is now really that protagonist character because they get to imprint their own name, their own personality, and everything onto it. So, you know, it was done in Bulletproof very specifically for that reason.
So it's kind of interesting that your first, you know, attempt to be a director, you make the ballsy ass decision of actually starring the movie as well. So that's like a double level of responsibility, because not only are you directing, but now you're in the scene you're trying to direct as well. How the hell do you manage that one?
Well, I had a phenomenal team, and it comes down to the preparation as well. Like we had prepped all of the shots, all of the setups prior to even landing on set. So of course you have conversations if things aren't quite working as much as well as they should be on the day, and you're making adjustments. But because we were so prepared, we were able to just go, okay, so here's our list. We're working through our list for the day. Here's the setup. This is what we're doing. And I would direct the actors, talk to the crew. And then the character I was playing, it's the rogue character. So there's a lightness to it. So, you know, I was afforded the ability to be able to jump in front of that character. And I knew it so well from the writing of it too, that, that it allowed me to do it. But I mean, if I was hired to do something quite outside of myself, I would probably think twice about directing and acting at the same time, just with the sheer amount of concentration that's needed.
I imagine from a matter of perspective, when you're the director, you're watching the things unfold in front of you, gives you a perspective, especially almost like the camera perspective of what's happening. When you're in the scene as well, perspective of the director changes now because you're actually in the moment. So how difficult is that to picture in your head what you'd be seeing watching that scene as it unfolds?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it really comes down to casting as well. I mean, you got to make sure that the casting's so on par and so aligned that your actors they've got a lot more latitude than they normally would if they were trying to do something outside of themselves. So it's kind of a little bit of a safety net in that regard. But also too, like when you're in the moment, you can feel if it's not working. And so it was kind of a gift. I got a chance to like be in the moment, not have to think about it, but if I'm not feeling it from that actor, I can already kind of feel it from a directing standpoint, make that adjustment and then jump back into the scene.
Is there a need at all to separate the actor that's you from the director that's you? In other words, maybe things as an actor that you would want to see happen, maybe how the camera is looking at you or pointed to you is different from as the point of view of a director who thinks in a much larger sense. That makes sense as a question.
Yeah, it does. I was really only thinking director first. So knowing what I needed to get out of myself when I was acting in order to make the scene work, not so much of I got to do this so that everyone sees how good of an actor is or how good this performance is going to be. I was really looking at it from a fundamental perspective. Like this is the brick that I need to build for my part in the wall. And as long as that brick's fine, I'm not going to be concerned about it. And you know, I don't really get too heady about my acting or my performances anyway. Usually I forget about it right away. And I don't really have an opinion about the performance afterwards, or even an opinion of it while I'm doing it, because I'm really just looking at it as a process and building it. So it's, I don't know, it's like outside of myself in a lot of ways.
Mm. Well, another challenge that you had as a storyteller, as the director storyteller, is that you have character Temple played by Vinnie Jones, which is the ruthless drug lord. You play the thief who robs him. So you have a one hand a drug lord, the other hand a thief. How do you create a situation so the audience is empathizing with the thief? Or is there a character that you're supposed to, as the audience, connect you and go, that's the guy I'm rooting for?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, it's all done at the script writing stage, right? Like the first character that you meet is our hero, is the thief, the protagonist. And then, you know, you right away you see that, you know, as much as this character is an anti-hero, you have that save the cat moment where you feel like there's heart with this person, but it's built into his relationship with Temple's wife, right? You know, his save the cat moment is really his lock-in where he has no choice but to go on to this adventure. So we were like really economical with it, because another thing I wanted to do with Bulletproof is I really wanted to make a pure action film. I wanted to see, you know, how I could execute a film that was just non-stop and you're being barraged, but there's still story happening. So I was playing with the structure a little bit on it.
I mean, and Mia sounds like a very interesting character. As you said, she's the wife of Temple. And obviously she's trying to escape from him, knowing what he does as the drug lord. But at the same time, being the wife, she had to have found something in Temple at some point that she found desirous.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, going back to the film, you know, being a popcorn film, as much as it is, there is like a real dramatic, you know, undertone of new beginnings. You know, a lot of these characters, they just want to start anew and get out of where they're at. So I think with the Mia character, I think she certainly, you know, she came from a darker place and she did what she had to do. She was young. She was from a different country. But the fact that she's pregnant, the fact that she's about to become a mother, you know, that's really, that's the crux of it. You know, her knowing that she needs to start a better life because she's going to repeat, you know, the sins of the past are going to repeat themselves, you know, if she's going to continue living this life.
So is Temple motivated by the anger of his wife escaping, or is he truly trying to recover her, as it were, and force her back?
Well, Temple's insane. You know, that character's nuts through and through. Even as one of his final lines to me at the end of the film got a lot of laughs. And I didn't realize it was a funny line, but it is, because I don't want to ruin it for people. But when he says the line before, like, the ultimate climax, you go, oh, yeah, you'd only be insane to say that line. It's just so insane. Like, he just doesn't get it. I think he's just so hyper-focused on what he wants, but he is truly in love with her. But there's so much of that other crap to unpack that he would never be able to reform himself into it. He's just rotten to the core. Who is legitimately in love with somebody?
That's interesting. It's hard to imagine someone with that level of, I don't know if he's a psychopath or sociopath, but can also, and all the horrible things he does as Temple, is also someone who's capable of love of this one individual.
These people exist in real life.
I don't doubt it. It's just it's a fascinating idea of an individual that can function that way.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. Reason why I answered like that is you made me think of a couple individuals that I know that are literal tornadoes. But they have that one particular person in their life where they're just someone completely different. When they go, like, and you're trying to reconcile who's the stranger. Because we all have faces. We all have the mask that we put on to varying degrees. And some of us don't have masks at all. But I'm always curious about, you know, when someone steps out into the world, is the real, it's either the real person or it's the mask. I'm always curious to know which is which.
You know, it also kind of reminds me of, I've been watching a TV show on Netflix, Dahmer. I don't know if you know of it. And
I do.
And Dahmer, once again, infamous as a serial killer and all the people he killed. But apparently he truly loved his grandmother. And, you know, had this great deep love for his grandmother. However, he's also this horrible cannibalistic murderer, but apparently fully capable of loving at least one person. It's weird.
It's very weird. I wouldn't even know how to unpack that.
Well, I mean, I think it's also interesting about Temple, once again, his idea that he truly loves Mia. However, if he's forcing her to come back with him, once again, that's against her will, what she wants. So it's an interesting concept of what love would then be to Temple.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the film deals with that. You know, it deals with the love, everyone's varying degree of what they love. You know, the thief loves the money. Mia loves her baby. Temple loves his wife and that child, right? Because it is his legacy that he's fighting for as well, his unborn son. And I mean, it never gets touched upon, but you know, you look at the Frenchman, who's the ultimate James Bond, you know, style villain in the film. He must love killing.
Yeah.
Because that's all he does, right? Like, you don't become an assassin if there's not some part of you, right? And, you know, why does he love it? Where does that come from? Something to be explored in sequels.
You think are there going to be sequels? Or do you have some planned?
Yeah, there is going to be a sequel.
Nice.
We're actually in preparation for it right now. Yeah, it is nice. It's going to be... It's a lot of fun. I can't divulge anything about it, but it's another continued adventure of the thief. And we'll see who returns, who doesn't return. But I hope to do another one after. I'd like to do three of them if I can.
That would be totally awesome. And you're coming back and you're going to be on the show for each one to talk about it.
I would love to, yeah, if you'll have me, absolutely.
Most certainly. So another question about something like this with acting, with action movies, is that an action movie can be so... like I said, the momentum can be so strong that you can get carried away in the action. How do you find the moments to develop character without getting, you know, not getting too stuck in this constant momentum of what the action is taking you on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real tough, that's a real tough thing to execute. You know, it's hard for me to answer that because it's such a process. You're trying to give enough of the onion or peel enough of the layers in between, but you got to reconcile the pacing of the film as well. Mm. And so, you know, it's interesting that you asked that question because I think it's actually addressed really well in Bulletproof. Some people, audience or viewers have criticized that it might be moving too fast and skip over some things, but it really was, it was really meant to be an introduction into the world and you're kind of getting a taste on it. And it's done in a very specific way to move that quick because in the sequel, we get to expand and kind of feel around that sandbox just a little bit more, just a little bit.
So is Mia part of the sequel or is it going to focus solely on the thief?
I can't tell you these things. There's no official announcements, but it's a great question.
All right, good. I'm going to have to, I have to ask them, of course, right? So where can our listeners find Bulletproof?
Well, they can find it everywhere. I mean, it just finished its theatrical run, which is unfortunate because it's a great film to watch on the big screen. It was shot in large format in the beautiful, you know, Ashcroft, Cache Creek area of British Columbia, which is it looks like New Mexico, very deserty, lots of sagebrush, beautiful horizons. But right now they can watch it anywhere on demand, anywhere digitally, and Blu-ray and DVD. It actually just released on September 27th as well. So, yeah, I encourage everyone to check it out. It's a great time, and it's well-rated by anyone who watches it. So
that's awesome, sir. Thank you so much for talking with me, Mr. Clayton. I want to, like I said, I can't wait to see it and the sequel. So you come right back on and talk about that as well.
Okay, just call me. I'm here. Take care.